My name is Joe, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry its message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Kereth and Giroux, have a list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Danny will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Danny. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Sarah will read the steps.
Hi, I'm Sarah, and I'm an alcoholic. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. Step two, came to believe in a power greater than ourselves to restore us to sanity. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Step four, made a searching and fearless inventory of ourselves. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all of these defects of character. Step seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step nine, may direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so to injure them or others. Step 10, continue to take a personal inventory, and we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry the message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all of our affairs.
Anya will read the traditions.
Hello, I'm Anya. I'm an alcoholic. And I will read the traditions. The 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but our ultimate authority, a loving God, as we may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6. An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, less problems of money, property, and prestige direct us from our primary purpose. 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA as such would never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name would never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
We will try a four-month test format on anniversary night, which takes place on the last Tuesday of the month. As such, we will move the tradition speaker to the first Tuesday. The format of tonight's meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, one of which will speak on the fourth tradition, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker tonight is Elaine.
Hi, my name is Elaine, and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is here at AG, and my sobriety date is January 10th, 2010. No, 2009. Thanks. I grew up in Dublin, Ireland. I was the youngest girl with siblings, 5 siblings. Even as a child, I always thought I was different. I thought it was because I was tall. I didn't really know why. I've learned that, yes, I am different, but it's okay. I'm fine with it. It's actually okay to be different. As I said, I was the youngest girl. My father never drank. My mother was a daily gin and tonic. She would have a gin and tonic while she cooked the dinner, and that was it. That was it. Done and dusted. But our house was a very social house. A lot of people came and went, family, friends, neighbors. In the 70s, Ireland, house parties were big, and my mother was a great entertainer. So as a child, we would greet people who came and ask them what they wanted to drink. They still do it there to this day. So I'm not really too sure how old I was when I had my first drink. I was probably 11 or 12. But I do remember it was a vodka white. A vodka white is actually kind of like a vodka 7-Up. I loved the way it tasted, and I loved the way it felt. I just felt great. I was giggly, I was confident, and that was my first taste of alcohol. As I said, I'm tall, so it was very easy for me to get served in the bars. In Ireland, they don't card you. The legal age over there is 18, so I was officially drinking in bars and clubs by 16. No questions asked, and that's just how it was. Actually, that's how it still is. So when I was in my late teens, I took off to Germany on the pretense that I was going to work and I was going to make money. And I discovered schnapps in Germany, and I loved it. So I partied around mainland Europe for about 8-9 months, and I actually had to borrow the money to come home to Ireland. And then when I got back to Ireland, I was restless. I didn't know what I wanted, what I wanted to do. So I came here. I was 22 years of age when I came here, and I was going to conquer New York, and I felt I kind of did in some ways. I discovered champagne, stretch limousines, clubs, after hours. And being that I was illegal, I ended up working at a bar as a bartender and waitress. And most of my friends, we were all illegal back then in the 80s, we were all bartenders and waitresses, so it was very convenient just to go bar hopping, which we did every night of the week. We had a proverbial $20 bill that went round, and we partied. I actually enjoyed my 20s. I had a great time in my 20s. I enjoyed it, and I did party a lot. I did a lot of other substances, too. But then when my 30s came around, I was still restless. The void was getting bigger and bigger, and my life was getting darker. The darkness was kind of creeping in, and I didn't know how to fill it. I didn't know what to do. So my solution then was alcohol. But it took more and more alcohol to fill that void, and I still wasn't happy. But I kept going. I'm a kind of, you know, pull up your socks and keep going kind of girl, and no matter what happens, you just keep going. And I did. I kept going. So that was my 30s, and, you know, I had some good times, bad times. I only really discovered, till I came in the program last year, that I was a blackout drinker. I didn't think I was. We used to call it automatic pilot, when you didn't know how you got home last night, or you don't remember getting undressed. We call that automatic pilot, and that was fine. That was totally acceptable. And then in my 40s, I wasn't married. I had no children. My father was a very staunch Irish Catholic. And so I was going to prove to him, to me, to everybody, the reason for that was because I was a businesswoman. And I was going to be very successful, and I opened my own store. And that lasted about 3 years. I don't necessarily blame it on alcohol. There was other factors involved, too. But I closed my store after 3 years and decided I would go back to Ireland and regroup, rethink, and decide what I was going to do. That was not a good idea because at this stage, I was in the throes of my alcoholism. I was in the throes of my disease. But I didn't know it. I had no idea. My father thought I needed help, and I just thought I was unloved and totally misunderstood. So, as geographics are such a big part of my story, I decided I would come back to New York. And I did. I packed my bags yet again, and I came back here. And that's when all the sunlight totally, totally disappeared from my life. Drinking wasn't social anymore. Drinking was a need for me. I had to drink, and I drank every day. And then it got to the stage, I didn't want to drink with anybody. I didn't even want people over to the apartment. I just wanted me and my bottle, and that's it. And I justified it every way I could. I didn't drink during the day. I didn't drink till 5 o'clock. But I drank every day. And then one bottle became two bottles. And then my average day was a blackout. It was 2 or 3 bottles of wine and a blackout. And that's how I lived for months. I thought at the time that I was looking for a job. And yeah, I was getting out there and, you know, kind of putting myself out there. But, you know, didn't these people know who I was, the experience I had? How dare they offer me that kind of money? What's wrong with them? I'm better off not working. And then it was back to the apartment. My bottle, I actually used to call him Walter. And so I wasn't really drinking alone. You know, I had my good buddy. We had code names for all our drugs and everything. But last New Year's rolled around, and it was the New Year, so I had no idea what was ahead of me, and I'm one of these people that what happens in January was going to set my whole year. So I was going to do a juice detox, a soup and juice detox, and just get really healthy, and that was going to kickstart me, and everything was going to work out for me. And so by day 2 of my detox, I decided I would, it was a very good friend of mine's birthday who had passed the year before, so I was going to have an organic cocktail, which is fresh orange juice, coconut water, and vodka. Like, that wouldn't really hurt a detox. So it was 5 a.m. the next morning, and I couldn't actually believe it. I had drank the entire bottle of vodka. I wasn't even a vodka drinker. I was a wine drinker. I had drank the entire bottle of vodka, and I thought I was sober. I thought I was stone cold sober. And that scared me. That really, really scared me. The next day, I was jumping out of my skin, needless to say, and I was out of my mind. So my solution was to call the liquor store and order in another bottle of vodka, because I heard the dog would work, which I did. And I don't know how many hours later, maybe 12 hours later, I was sitting in my chair by the terrace, just crying my eyes out because I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to go. I just didn't know what to do. I was totally, totally out of my mind. So I called a very good friend of mine who'd been in the program for years. And I cried. I couldn't even ask for help. I just cried. But she understood. She got it. And she had a friend call me and take me to my very first meeting, which I went to, but I wasn't an alcoholic. I was only going to get my head straight, figure things out, and then people talked about the 90-day thing, and I was like, okay, I'll do the 90 days. I'll show you all. I don't need this. I'll be fine. 90 days, great detox. I'll be great. It'll be fine. But after my 90 days, I realized, even before my 90 days, I knew I belonged here. So I did. I counted my days. I went to meetings. I found myself the most wonderful, wonderful sponsor. She has kept me sane this last year. She's just incredible, Jane P. I was to do service. I was to go to my meetings, read the big book, take the steps, other directions that I really didn't care for in some ways. And I won't say I'm the easiest of sponsees. I can, you know, say what I feel about it. But I do. I read the big book. I've taken the steps with Jane. They haven't been easy. Some of them have been very, very painful. Step four is very, very painful. But you know what? I found good in me, too. It wasn't all bad. Like, there's good in there. And I think as alcoholics, we tend to think it's all bad. It's not. There is a lot of positive in us. I think we just bury it. So I have so much to be grateful for. I pray every morning. I pray for sanity, for guidance, and just strength to take me through the day. I meditate. I try and call people and keep in touch. And I just, without all you guys, nearly every single person in this room, AA in general, I wouldn't be here now. I wouldn't be who I am today. So thank you. Thanks, everyone.
And our second speaker tonight is Michael.
Hi, I'm Michael, and I'm an alcoholic. Here we are. So it was explained to me that we start this by reading the long form of the tradition. And so here it is, the fourth tradition. With respect to our own affairs, each AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. But when its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups also, those groups ought to be consulted, and no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect AA as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the General Service Board on such issues. Our common welfare is paramount. So I first want to just say that it's a real privilege to speak at this meeting anytime, but specifically on a tradition. It's a real honor, and I just want to thank Jeff for asking me to speak. My home group, just the stats, my home group is the Atlantic group. My sobriety date is November 9th, 2001, so I've got about 8.5 years-ish. And coming here, and coming to the Atlantic group generally, coming to Tuesday night especially, is the most consistently I've ever done anything in my life. I've never been this consistently present at something ever, and it's the basis on which the rest of my life has grown and blossomed. So I just wanted to thank the group for that. So onto the tradition. My favorite, or maybe not favorite, but an amusing line to me, in as it's written in the 12 and 12, is this. A group ought not to do anything which would greatly injure AA as a whole, nor ought to affiliate itself with anything or anybody else. It says greatly injure AA. That means it can injure AA a little bit, which is sort of, I think, just a generous approach that AA has in terms of being inclusive and generally understanding of the fact that AA is made up of alcoholics and we are a chaotic lot. Bill went on to write an editorial in 1948 for the Grapevine, and he elaborated on a few things that I want to just cite. He writes that a group can make any decision and adopt any attitudes that it likes. And he goes on to basically say that which to me reveals the level of faith that AA as a whole has in its higher power. It says, those severe growing pains which invariably follow any radical departure from AA tradition can be absolutely relied upon to bring an erring group back into line. An AA group need not be coerced by any human government over and above its own members. Their own experience, plus AA opinion and surrounding groups, plus God's prompting in their group conscience would be sufficient. Which basically means that AA is willing to let individual groups make their own mistakes and learn from them. And in fact, they cite the process of AA's initial development as a process of trial and error through which it learned the things that it ultimately applied to the traditions and what we base our program on today. And to me, that's an incredible simplicity that this program that's made up of people like us who don't like simplicity, that we can rely on that to keep us on a path towards success, ultimately. He writes, adds one qualification to that, which is, I think, really critical on the basis of what the rest of what I want to say. The qualification is this: but when its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups, also these groups should be consulted. And really, what they're cautioning against here is that a group can do whatever it wants, but if it starts to think that it's figured it out, like figured out the big it, that it is that it wants to start applying that learning to other groups, and as if we, the Atlantic Group, thought in our structure that we have it better than others, and we're going to start applying that, we're going to start proselytizing on these ideas, and we're going to go to other groups and try and get them to change, that would be a profound mistake. And if we started representing AA to the public and saying that the Atlantic Group way is the way, that would be a mistake. And I want to share a little bit about my personal experience from here. And I mentioned the Atlantic Group, obviously. To me, the Atlantic Group is a perfect example of this tradition in effect. We have strong customs. And I actually want to thank the founders of this meeting for those customs. And as many of you know, if you've been to other meetings, it's not infrequent that the Atlantic Group is subtly or explicitly criticized for those traditions and for what I think is often a perceived rigidity on the part of this group. And that's not my experience. My experience of that is something that I've ultimately found myself to be extremely grateful for. I don't consider it rigidity, I consider it structure. And when I came into this room about 8 years ago, I was like many of us. My approach in the rest of my life and my alcoholism was, don't you know who I am? You know, it was this idea of I'm different, they wouldn't get it, this works for them because they don't have the disease like I have the disease. And I didn't even think I had a disease. Somebody once defined it like this, that I, as an alcoholic, and I've learned that a few of you share this with me, is we're egomaniacs who think that we have ESP, which means I know what you're thinking, but I'm right. And I applied that to my whole life. And I'll tell you, when I there were many times in my early sobriety that I wanted to leave this group in particular, except I was so desperate that I stayed. And what I found was that the things that needed to change in me, that attitude, that ego, that but my case is different, but don't you know who I am, that self-importance, in the face of the Atlantic Group structure was checked. And I had to change in order to stay here. And that I'm forever grateful for, because that enabled me to have anonymity, which led to humility, which led to a spiritual experience, a conscious contact with God, which led me the ability to change and to grow. And that was the beginning of everything for me. And so there's a piece in that, there's sort of a paradox that I've discovered both in my own sobriety and as the fourth tradition specifically relates to AA and to the group, is that change, that ability, that we get better, and then we start to get ambitious, and we start to want to grow the program and change the program. We have insights, you know, we have epiphanies about what needs to happen now. And even Bill Wilson did. I mean, he had this vision for vast facilities around the country that would be rehabs and detoxes and educational facilities and do outreach to educate the populace about what the condition of alcoholism is and give out money to people to help them get back on their feet. And that's ultimately what the AA Service Board said. You know, you can experiment with that, but that is not our mode. You can do that as a group if you want, but that isn't something that we can charter or we can endorse and support. And that's, you know, and it's that balance that I found between, you know, a group conscience that's really strong. Like on the one end, you have a group conscience like the Atlantic Group that's really strong, and on the other end, you have indifference. And I've unfortunately seen that at a lot of meetings, where it's indifference or worse, alcoholism that's really running the room, that's running the agenda, that's defining the conversation. And I think that we here in particular strike a balance. I think the fourth tradition is about finding that balance and maintaining that balance. And that's not an easy thing to do. And I don't think that this meeting is perfect, but I think we do a pretty good job at that. Because we're not simple, you know. Alcoholics aren't simple. We hate simplicity. We don't do group well, you know. We're individualists. We're egomaniacs. We're self-centered to the extreme. And this is what the book tells us. And I think that when that is left unchecked, and when we can when that runs the meeting or runs the conversation in a meeting, or when it defines the ambitions of a specific group, ultimately AA is at risk. Thank you. I want to say here, it's tough to encapsulate this whole thing in 10 minutes, but let me just see what else I've got here. Okay, so I just want to end with this, that, and this is partly in reflecting the fourth tradition, and it's partly in defense of, not in defense of, in celebration of this group. You know, what this is all about, what the Jack and Ty and what the structure and what, you know, 200 plus service positions is about, is about helping the newcomer be happy, joyous, and free. That is ultimately what all this is about. And it's been my experience, and I think if you stick around long enough, you'll see that this program and this structure and this group does it very well, and it works. And if you follow in those steps, that you can find that. Ultimately, this whole program is about us letting go, the individual letting go, and you finding that happy, joyous, and free life, which is what sobriety is all about. So I hope you find that, and thank you very much, the Atlantic Group.
Is Liz B.
You should have warned me, Peggy. Wow. Whew. Good evening to all. My name is Liz Bailey. My anonymity's been shut. But I have to tell you that I don't run around telling who's in the fellowship and who's not. I don't believe in doing that. That's not for us to do. I am the most grateful alcoholic you ever laid your eyes on. And many have said, oh, what does she mean she's grateful she's an alcoholic? Well, if I wasn't an alcoholic, I wouldn't be here for number one. Number two, it brought me here. I want to thank Jeff and the group for inviting me again. I usually make this group twice a year. I want to thank Knowledge. He drove up on time and looking good. He even got the car looking good. And I thank him so much. I want to thank all of you because without you, there would be no me. I came into AA. I want to thank the 10-minute speakers. You were gorgeous. And I want to thank you for love and service, too. And you know when to shut me up, don't you? Good. Because when I started with this group, you had a paper up in front of me. Now you got plastic. That's how you've grown. Isn't that wonderful? And when I started with this group, this church was not this full. Now you're in the ramp in the balcony. Oh, my God. And the side. Look at this. The growth, and I've been privileged to see this growth. I came into AA at the age of 31, and now I'm a swinging 88. I can't even. Yeah. Yeah. I can't even turn them eights around, baby. I can't turn them around. I've been wishing I could turn them around. August the 15th, I'll make 89. But I came in July the 11th, 1952. And so this July, I'll be 58 years away from my last drink. And it shows you, you can do it. You can do it. Without you, there's no me. I need you. I'm not cured. I got to remember that. I have to learn how to stay in my place with all the things. Even Bill Wilson, when I spoke for his 28th anniversary, he gave me my first big book. And he wrote in it, "Dearest Liz, you're a magnificent demonstration of all that is AA. Affectionately yours, Bill." I treasure that book. I won't bring it out because I know if I turn my head, it's gone. So I don't bring it out. But I treasure that. Bill was beautiful. Lois was beautiful. Lois and I were together the last time in Sing Sing. And we went up there for a lovely dinner that they gave Lois and I. And you know what happened? It turned out I was standing in the lobby taking pictures with the warden. And I'm saying cheese, and the warden said, "Liz, no more cheese. Sex gets a better smile." So for years now, I've been saying sex when you take my picture. And you do get a better smile. You do get a better smile. I love meeting Chuck tonight, and there's another young lady, I've forgotten the name already, but it was a pleasure. I had a write-up in the Grapevine in May 06, and at the end of my interview, they asked me what would I like to see change in AA. And right now I want to cry because you have showed me this change. I want to see the enthusiasm come back. Oh, get in here, put both feet, because halfway measures avail you nothing. And I want to tell you something. You can get mad at me if you like. Once you've ever crossed the door sill of any AA room, you do not drink and drug in peace anymore. Because I've been here 57 and a half years, and not one of you have cursed that door and told me it's so great out there. And I thank you for that, because I'm not going back out there. Not going back. I don't care what I have to grow through, G-R-O-W through, I'm not going back. And I've been through hell and back. Make sure you show me my sign now. Okay. Because I'm one of them girls that like to follow directions. I was so happy even when Bill came out with that sign in Florida one year. I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out their hand for AA, he wants us to be there. And so I bid that. I came into AA at 31, really 13 up here. I had let the streets of New York rob me of everything. Lying, cheating, ducking, dodging, conniving to stay drunk. To stay drunk. Found myself on a park bench one day. Woo! What's wrong with this picture? Something wrong with this picture. I live three blocks from Liberty Park, got a brand new home, new furniture, new bed, mattress, and I'm on the park bench. I'm drinking with the guys behind the barbershop, on the corner, anywhere. I remember a woman invite me around the corner to her house for dinner. I went around there, and I'm drunk, and I'm coming out, and she says to me, "You know, you ate my husband's dinner." I said, "Well, I'll give you the fence, the back fence." Girls, don't you ever go in and try a fry of frozen chicken junk. Because I did, and I burned up both of my legs. These legs stayed like raw meat till I came to AA. AA is a healing room. You're sitting under healing tonight, whether you like it or not. Because where there's two or more under the same accord, God's in the midst. And you might not like the word God, because when I came into AA, you mentioned God to me, I'd curse you out. I'd lay your soul to rest. You know why? I did. I'd curse you right down. Because my mouth was bad. And I remember that my life wasn't going the way I thought it should go. And as long as I cursed God in AA, I stayed sick. The only thing that saved me is that I picked me a tough sponsor. And when I'd go and whine to her, she'd tell me, "Listen, Liz Bailey, AA don't need you, but you need AA." I'd cry. And I'd go right back and whine some more. And she told me, "Sit on the pot or get up off it." And I'm going to tell you, when I came into AA, they did not talk nice to you. I'm talking nice to you. they didn't talk nice. And I had to learn how to talk. I didn't dress right. I came in with slits and low-cut backs and high heels like you're wearing today, and I flitted all over AA. A priest sent me a message, Father Kelly. Asked that broad what she doing in AA. Honey, I had to learn how to dress. I didn't know how to dress. I came off a bar stool. Come on. Drinking. Drinking all the time. Had to have the drink to wash, to iron, to cook, to talk, to do anything. I had to have a drink. But I was a drunk from an alcoholic, really, not knowing until I came to AA, from the age of 12 years old when my mother made rice wine. And she left me to sieve this rice wine through cheesecloth. And I sieved and I sipped. Ooh, honey, I loved it. I sieved. I'm only 12 years old, and I'm sieving and sipping. Sieving and sipping. Put on a drunk, woo! And at the age of 14, I began to sell King Kong booze. I bought it from the man who made it in the bathtub next door. I bought it by the gallon. I'm selling it for 40 cents a cream pitcher. And you told me to take mayonnaise, olive oil, butter, line myself up before I drink that stuff. Honey, that King Kong was so powerful it went all through the mayonnaise, the butter, the olive oil, the cream. So I stopped taking that sick stuff. But I drank plenty of booze at the age of 14. Plenty of booze. And I had to be padlocked into a side room. One night, I'm laying out the window. I live one flight up. You ain't put up that sign yet? Oh, Jesus. One night, I'm laying out the window, and I see this sharp dude. Oh, he was so sharp, almost fell out the window, to tell you the truth. I'm young. I'm 14. What do you want? They're still getting me in AA. When this guy walked me down the aisle here tonight, I said, oh, thank God I'm not going to get married. But here again, he had a roll of money, this guy. He was sharp. I went down and latched onto this guy with that roll of money because I was always looking for a live one. I even look for live ones in AA. I don't deal with deadheads in AA. I'll tell you that right now. I deal with people that are going and doing and giving. Deadheads will take you down. Take you down. And I don't want to go down. I don't want to go down because I live a grand life here. And what happened is that I ran down, latched onto this cute little dude with the roll of money, and found out it was a $5 bill around a lot of ones. But he's so cute, who cared? So I latched on to him, and I lived up 163rd here between Amsterdam and Edgecombe. That's where I was raised. And he'd bring me all down on the Lower East Side to joints, and I'd come so they'd come up to me. Well, I watched myself going down. I was always on my knees saying, I'm sorry. I wore I'm sorry out. I wore it out. And then I would promise my husband and people that I wasn't going to drink like that anymore. And in 20 minutes to an hour, my thinking would go off, and I would go off, and then the guilt and the remorse would set in so heavy. Here I've done it again, and I don't want to do it again. And I remember so clearly, Mr. Bailey came to me one night, and he said to me, you know, Liz, you're a lovely wife when you're sober. Drunk, you're a Jekyll and a Hyde. Why don't you try this AA? When you desire a drink, run over to the phone, pick up the phone, and call someone and let them talk you out of the drink. Now, you guys today are walking around with phones, got phones in your ear, up and down the street with phones. Phones are everywhere. Call somebody. Call somebody. It wasn't in my time. You either ran to the phone or put 10 cents in. Now the phone is even 50 cents, but it's worth not drinking. Worth not drinking. So here again, I cursed Mr. Bailey out when he told me about AA. You know what I told him to do with AA, too, don't you? Every one of you know that. I'm not going in. I've really had to work on myself. I've had to do a lot of work on Liz Bailey to be the woman that I am today. And I shouted for many years now. I stand tall with dignity today. Woo! Never did I dream with my head laying in vomit, and I don't know who I am and where I am, that I would even say that. That I would even say that. But today, for years, I can say that. I stand tall with dignity, and I really do. After I spoke for Bill Wilson, I got 32 speaking engagements. I spoke for Bill at Hotel Commodore, at 2,700 people that night. And that's what took me across this United States. I'm just coming across the United States, every state but one, and for third time I've hit every state. I've hit all of Canada. I've hit all the islands. I got off the plane in Hawaii. They put a layer of gardenias around my neck and a crown of flowers on my head. And I'm saying, watch it, because see, when it gets good, woo, you got to watch it, because most of you go back out when it gets good. Watch it. I've watched you. I keep an eye. I'm nosy. I'm really nosy. I keep an eye on you. See, and I know when it gets good for me, I have to have the attitude of gratitude to keep me in recovery. I have to find something every day to be grateful for. And at 88, going on 89, you know I'm happy to get up and say, good morning, God, instead of, oh, God, it's another morning. I used to hate to see another day come that I'd have to work it out and fight it out. But no more. Attitude plus gratitude for everything. And at my age, 88, you know, when I can get up here and I can come over here from Hollis, Long Island, and I can travel, and I'm booked for New Mexico this year, September 16, 17, and 18. And that'll mean I covered every state in this United States. But when I got off that Hawaii plane, and they put the flowers, and every meeting I went to in Hawaii, because the hotel gave me 8 free days. So I had 8 free days from the hotel, all the directors in the hotel. And I covered every meeting there in Hawaii. I had laser flowers. When I went to the stores, they put laser beads. I came back to New York. I said, I've never been laid so much in my life. I had flowers up to here. And everywhere I go, it's such a good time. Such a good time. I mindset myself for a good time before I leave my house. Mindset yourself for good in your life. As a man thinketh, so be it. You think up, you come up. You think down, you go down. Always think up. And I've had a lot of hurdles. I thank God till today they told me not to get sober for my mother. Because if I had to stay sober for my mother, I'd have been drunk, drunk, drunk. My mother did not like me telling you I was an alcoholic. It took my mom many, many years to tell me, stay with them A's, whatever they are. And see, I don't plan to leave these A's. After I spoke for Bill, Mr. Bailey asked me to please leave him. He couldn't tolerate me and my sobriety any longer. I used the third and the 11th step. These steps are to be used, and the slogans are to be used. If you see me going to the ladies' room, I'm doing first things first. Okay? I am. Easy does it. At my age, I do easy does it. I stayed home all day yesterday. See? Think the happiness I now know. Thank you, precious. He finally got it up at me. See? And I think means the happiness I now know. Think about the happiness you now know. Don't take it for granted. See? So again, my oldest son hated my guts for 54 and a half years. He let me know he was 12 years old. Next month he'll be 70. And I'm getting old and I don't like it. Because I'm happy I came over here to Dr. Butterworth years ago, who taught me age was none of my business. Woo-hoo! And it isn't. Because if I go on 88, I wouldn't be sitting here. I'd be in my recliner. See? And I wouldn't do that. But wherever Liz Bailey is called, and Peggy will vouch for me. Peggy been with me all her 37 years. 37? Woo! I'm getting sober. Woo! Getting sober, Peggy. Yes, I am. Yeah, she knows whenever you call, I come. Because we didn't have detoxes in halfway houses when I came to AA. Didn't have nothing that you have today. And I brought he or she home with me. I took he and she home and took care of you and sent you to your job on a Monday. I lost your car, but who cared? But I made sure you got on that job. I did. And I didn't take my clothes off for 3 or 4 days at a time because my kids are upstairs. I had these three children when I came to AA. And this oldest boy hated me all these years. He let me know he would never forgive me or forget me for my past. And I found the God in AA. I found it after 5 years. Because I got so sick from cursing God. I had migraine headaches, deep depression, isolation. And I cried for 5 years. And one day it dawned on me, this is a gift. And not everybody gets this gift. And if you want to keep this gift, Liz Bailey, you better put one hand in God and keep the other one in AA and go on a journey. I'm on a journey, not a destination, because I'm not planning to stop. I'm not planning to stop, I'm telling you. I'm going to keep on, keeping on. And about a little over 2 years ago, I got a telephone call. Who am I speaking to? He says, your son. I said, which one? He said, how many sons have you got? I said, in AA, I've got a many a son. I got knowledge and all these young dudes. You're my son. You don't know him. See, no, he don't know him. He's my son. He said, I got a many a son. He said, no, I'm your biological son, and I'm calling to make restitution to you. And I said, well, I'm accepting it because I've always loved you. Well, he sent me girls a $1,600 ticket. He lived in Beverly Hills, Los Angeles. And I got on that plane, and I got off the plane with the luggage because I'm going to stay 5 days. And I'm looking for some guy to walk. I'm always looking for a young dude. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I can't seem to get with senior citizens yet because I can't stand that moaning and groaning. And I just can't take it. I even tell you to come in here and do the slide and do the bumpy bump, you know. Don't come in here to die. Don't come in here to die. This is not the place to come to die. And so I get off the plane. I take $2 out of my pocket. I'm going to give it to a young dude to pull my luggage off the belt. And this young man comes up to me, and I give him the $2. And he says, I'm looking for my mother. Well, I don't know who his mother is. And I turn and look at him, and I saw Mr. Bailey up here. So I said, I'm your mother, and give me back my $2. And take the luggage off the belt. Well, I went there, and I had beautiful 5 days with him, and it was gorgeous. And you know, I did not bring up the past. I didn't go there to bring up the past. I went there to have a good time, and I had a good time. He took me to the best of places to eat. He made my breakfast every morning. And I tell you, I came back to New York beautiful. I went back in 09 from 2 October 2nd to 9th. Of course, we knew each other this time. But he asked me at lunch, could he have a wine? I don't go out and stop the world from drinking. That's not my business. Live and let live. There's another one of your slogans. I told him, and I was happy that he even asked me, could he have it in front of me? That's respect. But I don't have to drink. No. And so what happened is that I told the girl who booked me in California for meetings, don't book me every day because I'm coming to be with my son. So the first meeting I went to, she came back and she said to my son, boy, your mother is a star. Well, he gave her a dirty look. What a dirty look. The second night day, I did a 10:30 in the morning meeting. This guy gets out of the car, goes around, hugs my son, and tells my son, whoo, your mother got a standing ovation today. That was a standing ovation. He got a triple dirty look. So I come back to New York to tell all of you, don't tell my family you like me. They can't take it. Mr. Bailey couldn't take it. Of course, when I went to speak for that $2,700 for Bill in the Hotel Commodore, you guys lined up the corridor, thanking him for me. And he came home and banged every stove pot on the stove. I got to get rid of you, he says. And I left Mr. Bailey because he couldn't stand me in my sobriety. I didn't get sober for him anyway. I got sober for Liz Bailey. Woo! For me. That's who I got sober for. And all this other garbage that they put down, it's their garbage, not mine. I keep on what I'm supposed to do. And so I have 20 grandchildren. 20 is coming up next month. I see them by appointment only. Yeah. No, I don't babysit. No, I never started that. Because once you tell them you can't do it, they get mad at you. So let them be mad at you without doing it. I don't do it. See? And my AA baby, on Saturday, she made 54 years old. Her name is Adrian Anita. She turned to be a Muslim 33 years ago. Here's where Live and Let Live come in. I was through raising her anyway. She was in college. God has allowed me to see three of my children through college. Also, I had a son who was an alcoholic and an addict. You young men, I love you. Please stay. I'll get on my knees for you to stay here to live a fantastic life, one you never dreamt that you would live. All through the 12 steps, 12 traditions, your meetings, and always go to the meeting you don't want to go to. That's the one you get the zinger every time. You'll get it every time. Because I had to come and learn how to listen to you and listen to learn. And I learned about me through you. I didn't know I was highly emotional. I didn't know I was highly sensitive. I knew nothing about me. Two things I knew when I came into AA. What are we drinking and what are we chipping in for? That's all I knew. And AA taught me I do not have to have a drink. I've gone up and had 10 operations in my sobriety. I've just come from the 10th one year before last. And you know, the doctor gave me 6 months to live. I found out I had cancer. 3 operations in 6 weeks. He says, I'm giving you 6 months. I said, you're not giving me anything. I said, because I'm in a fellowship that teaches me I live one day at a time. And now I even told you, like I told Knowledge in the car, I'm living in the moment. Woo! When you say that, you feel so good. Say it to yourself. I'm living in the moment. Because this is all you got is this moment. Life is full of yesterdays and no tomorrows. I've only got this moment. This is my shining moment right now. I don't know about the next 10 minutes, hour, nothing else. I don't have to. I don't have to. Keep it simple, sweetie. I don't call you stupid because I haven't met a stupid alcoholic yet. You're too smart for your own damn... Oh. Forgive me. Yeah, sometimes we do get... I've had people that told me they're too intellect for AA, and they end up in the psyche ward. Yeah. So I let them be intellect. I leave them alone. I leave them alone. But I'm still in my Alcoholics Anonymous, the most grandest fellowship in the world. I'm going to close with this because I'm out of town most weekends. Very seldom I'm in New York on a weekend. Okay, baby. I can do that in 5 minutes. Yeah. Thank you. I love you for you. I ought to package you up, but I wouldn't know what to do with you. I'd die with a smile on my face, though. I sure would. I went to a church that I thought I'd love to go to whenever I came home from a meeting of traveling. And I'm coming out to church this particular Sunday. And the lady stopped me at the door. She said, Sister Bailey, are you going to be here next Sunday? I said, no. She said, why not? I said, because I'm in Detroit. Now, I had 1,500 of you women to speak at in Detroit. It was like a flower garden. You look so gorgeous. And I said, no, I'm in Detroit. She said, what are you doing in Detroit? I said, speaking. Well, what do you speak about? I said, alcoholism. How come you speak about that? Because I said, I'm an alcoholic. She said, are you saved, Sister Bailey? Oh, yeah, I've been saved a long time. She said, do me a favor, Sister Bailey. And do the congregation a favor. Don't come back into this church again. Well, I walked out that church hysterical laughing. I was crazy. I laughed my fool self to death. I said, God, thank you. You put me in a fellowship who don't care who I am, what I am, what I've done, where I've been, how far down I've gone. Welcome. 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 Thank you.